Reading travelled up to Yorkshire for the second week in a row on Saturday, but there was to be no 3-0 win this time around as the Royals fell to a 1-0 defeat against promotion-chasing Leeds United. We're here on episode number 222 of the Tireless Den podcast to look back on that game and look ahead to a busy week for the club with two home games coming up in the next 7 days, plus Sheffield United next week as well. My name is Ollie Allen, standing in for Mark Mayo this week on the podcast. Mark's got a throat infection, and obviously it's not the most ideal thing to be hosting a podcast. So I'm stepping into the breach, and I'm joined by one of the hearty souls who braved the Yorkshire weather for a second week in a row and paid £39 for a ticket at the weekend. It's editor on the Tireless Den, Simeon Pickup. Sim, you must deserve some kind of medal.
Thank you. Very out of pocket and a little bit annoyed after that, to be honest. Frustrating game on the road, but there you go. Not too bad in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I think Mark Burns said he was proud but frustrated after that 1-0 defeat today. So, of course, we'll get straight into recapping that in just a minute. We are, of course, sponsored by ZCZ Films for the rest of the season. So thank you very much to them. And please do go and check out all of the great content that they produce over on their website. And, of course, thank you very much as well to everyone who continues to support us over on Patreon. It doesn't go unnoticed. It certainly doesn't. And also, you know, generally does help us with everything we do here at the Tireless Den. So thank you very much to both ZCZ Films and all of our Patreon subscribers. Right then, let's get straight into it with a recap of Leeds 1, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Mark Burr made one change from the 3-0 win over Sheffield Wednesday for this game at Elland Road. Sim, originally it was Pele, I think was injured for that Sheffield Wednesday game. He came back in, supposedly replacing Michael Olise, but then there was one last-minute change when Ovi Ejaria, I think, felt a slight calf strain, I think it might have been, or a hamstring strain in the warm-up. So in the end, it was Michael Olise who came back in. So the change effectively was Pele replacing Ovi Ejaria. Obviously, we're talking about Pele first, Sim. Obviously, he was that one change. You gave him the highest rating of a 7 in the player ratings. I think he's also currently winning our Man of the Match poll. And he didn't play last week and Reading won 3-0. But I think prior to that, you know, he'd done very, very well, sort of really cemented himself in the side. Was it good to have him back in that midfield?
Yeah, I think he adds a balance and a presence in the midfield that no one else really is capable of doing. So, I mean, Andy Rinnemhota is very energetic. He's very good at winning the ball and driving up the pitch with it, but he doesn't have that quite same presence as Pele. And that's something that's not necessarily quite as easy to quantify in terms of stats and stuff like that. But when he's in the midfield, he has a reading of the game and he has a real physicality that really helps everyone out. Basically, it protects the back four really nicely, which he did at the weekend. And it allows other players around him to just play that little bit more. And it really gave Reading an extra defensive dimension, I would say. As some people have pointed out after the game, he was prone to a pretty poor lapse of concentration for the goal, which, to be fair, is something that I didn't notice at first and would have mentioned in the ratings if I had. But apart from that lapse of concentration, which maybe you should have done better with, maybe you shouldn't have, then apart from that, he was a big boost to the team and good to have him back.
I know Stephen over on Twitter, obviously famous Twitter threads, go and check them out if you haven't already. I think his username is @cabin__13. Does some cracking Twitter threads. And we've done one this afternoon on Pele, based on the back of obviously our 7 out of 10 rating for him and winning our Man of the Match part. I think Jonathan Lowe over at Berkshire Live gave him an 8 out of 10 from Saturday's performance, and I think called it a dominant performance from Pele as well. But Stephen's gone sort of through the stats from his display and worked out he didn't actually perform as well as people are saying. And obviously, you know, you can take stats on face value and whatnot, but obviously we did get that 3-0 win over Wednesday the previous week without Pele in the side. So there's certainly some sort of debate to be had over whether Pele sort of what he adds to Reading's team, and obviously playing in that holding role, and because of him playing in that holding role with John Swift as well alongside him, we saw Andy Rinnemhota push up to the number 10, you know, a position that he's not particularly played at all really for Reading, and obviously then moved out wide to the right hand side when Reading switched to a 4-4-2 in the second half. Quite an unusual place to see Rinnemhota in, wasn't it, Sim?
Yeah, it was. He hasn't really done that very much before. He's typically either been more of a box-to-box player I think last season that's where he really excelled. And when he's been inside this season, it's generally been as more of a deep-lying destroyer, essentially, as an alternative to Pelé when Pelé hasn't been there. But we have seen Renemoto there briefly before. I think it was the Bristol City away game in the second half. I think Reading started with a back three that day, but then changed to 4-2-3-1 at half time.
Yeah, went to midfield in the other.
Exactly. And Reading did the same from the outset against Leeds, obviously under a different manager. But what Renemoto did really well in both those games was add a lot of energy higher up the pitch, and it allowed Reading to press and harry Leeds much better than they had been able to before. Because Renemoto covers ground really quickly, those short distances. He covers them really quickly and he wins the ball at the end of it. And he's great at harrying. He's great at really making himself a nuisance. And when you're going up against someone like Calvin Phillips, who can be so influential from a deep-lying position for Leeds, you need to be able to counter that. And to his credit, Renemoto's his discipline, his energy, and his old mixture of that was really effective in shutting Phillips down and giving Reading that extra element. On the counter, Renemoto did have a few opportunities to push forward. He had space in front of him when Reading were on the counter and really to try and push Reading up the pitch, but he doesn't quite have that guile, doesn't have that technical ability on the ball in the same way that a Swifter and a Jari does, and perhaps it's something like that that just let Reading down in the final third a few times. But again, there's other players that are inside to do that, Swifter and Jari and Elise as well, who's obviously very impressive. And it was impressive from Renemoto, his defensive side, but hopefully we don't see the having to rely on his attack too much in the future.
I think especially, you know, when you come up against someone like Calvin Phillips, who is, you know, clearly one of the best players in the Championship. Some people tipping him for the England squad, which is perhaps a bit far-fetched, but even so, he's certainly one of the best players in the league. And I think it's almost a stroke of genius, really, from Mark Byrne to put Renemoto up there to try and limit Phillips' threat from there. But then when Calvin Phillips came off, I think he went off injured just before half-time, Renemoto's performance, you know, sort of seemed to dip after that and didn't really know what to do, because obviously I'm not sure who Leeds brought on in place of Phillips, but obviously nowhere near as dangerous as Phillips. And then perhaps Renemoto might have been better off, you know, maybe swapping with John Swift at half-time, you know, potentially try and give Reading a little bit more creativity in the second half. But certainly, I think from the outset, I would credit Mark Byrne with putting Renemoto up there, certainly to limit Calvin Phillips' threat. Someone else who stood out right away through the game was Michael Olise, and just 18 years old, of course. He started two games in a row for the first time after also playing against Sheffield Wednesday. He played out on the left, sort of coming into where Obi Ajaria played last weekend, and really stood out again, I think, from what I've read and from what I've seen. Obviously did that very impressive roulette to take out two Leeds players that sort of gone a bit viral on social media. Sim, you obviously saw him firsthand. How good was Michael Olise at the weekend?
He had some really good touches, really good moments on the pitch. Obviously that roulette, but generally he was tidy on the ball. He was sharp. He had ideas and he was creative. And for an 18-year-old going into a game like that, I think he actually made his debut for Reading against Leeds in the home tie against Bielsa last season.
Yeah.
And when you're going up against a tough opposition like that, I think probably the gut instinct for a young player is to kind of retreat into themselves a bit, to not want to make a mistake, to want to be a bit tidy and a bit safe, keep the ball when they can and not really try anything too over the top. But as you saw with that roulette, that sublime touch that he had to take it past two players in the blink of an eye, he's got that confidence, he's got that belief in his own ability. And when you've got that, it really brings out an awful lot of talent. He sure is a talented guy, but I think just as important as that was his maturity. He wasn't just glitzy, he wasn't just good on the eye, he wasn't just kind of a bright attacking player, but in his defensive duties, in his tracking back, he was working hard, he had a good attitude, and it's something that Bowen has really emphasised before about being able to trust someone like Michael Olise when he throws him into the first team. And going by that measure, I think Olise certainly showed that he could be trusted at Leeds, and hopefully it's done enough to earn him a run in the first team. Obviously, hopefully we don't want Ajaria to be out for too much longer, but If Elise is the man that has to replace Ajaria, then it's an opportunity that he's certainly deserved.
I think it was after that Forest away game where Michael Elise played, and I think it was after that that Bowen came out and said that he knows now that he can trust Michael Elise. You know, and I'd certainly agree in the fact that, you know, when Ovie Ajari missed a couple of games earlier in the season, Reading didn't really have an answer of sort of who to replace him with. And obviously Michael Elise isn't the answer straight away. As you say, he's only 18 years old, so I don't think you can rely on him, you know, for every single, I think every game between now and the end of the season. You don't really want to burn him out to an extent, but Reading certainly seem to have a very, very talented young player on their hands, someone who can play a variety of roles. You know, we've seen him play a deeper role this season. We've seen him play number 10. You know, now we've seen him play out wide. So certainly he gives Mark Byrne an option, and it's great to see him breaking into that first team and sort of giving Reading fans, you know, obviously a fantastic history with academy players coming through, and Elise certainly seems to be the latest one of those coming through the ranks. One other thing Mark Byrne probably would have been pleased with was the defensive performance on the whole. Really, I think they limited, you know, what is usually quite a potent lead attack, just two shots on target for the home side in that first half. And certainly, I know, Sim, you picked out Michael Morrison in your player ratings for particular praise in that first half, sort of organising the defence. Liam Moore as well, and it was really just that one lapse of concentration that led to the goal in the second half. I think it was Omar Richards who gave the ball away, and we discussed a little bit how Pelé perhaps didn't track his man, and Pablo Hernandez goes on and scores and always seems to score against Reading. He scored, I think, twice against us in the home game last season. But on the whole, Sim, I think Mark Byrne probably would have been pleased with that defensive showing. I think, you know, we'll get onto his comments in just a minute, but it was just that one lapse of concentration that you can't really afford to give, you know, the very best teams in this league, of which Leeds are one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it would have been, to be honest, a tall order to expect the team to keep their absolute concentration for the entire game. And when you're so overwhelmed with defending, when you're having to stay back so much and really absorb a lot of pressure, you are inevitably going to have some moment when you switch off and there's a chance for Leeds. And unfortunately, Hernandez has got a great amount of individual quality and he's able to kind of bamboozle his way past Moore and slam it into the net. There's every chance that if Leeds didn't have someone with that quality on the end of that chance, then it could still have been 0-0. It's one of those days, to be honest. And I think it says a lot about, basically about the gulf in quality between Leeds and Reading, that they have that individual quality to go and win that game. But even when it was 1-0, we didn't have that quality to get back into it. Obviously, Ajar is missing and Swift wasn't quite on the form that we would want him to be. But hopefully that's the kind of quality we're going to attract in the future. On the defensive side, as you said, Morrison was great. Really organises the defence, really brings a presence to the back four, basically. And it's something I think we've missed quite a lot in the last couple of years. You go back to 16-17 when we had Paul McShane as the experienced veteran kind of marshalling the back four. When he went off the ball in the next season and then didn't really replace him in the next season after that, 18-19, we really lacked that organisation. We really lacked that, basically that player that just knows how to deal with the danger. It's one thing to have Liam Moore, who's a talented defender, but he needs that really commanding, experienced defender next to him to not only bring out the best in him, but also to organise the whole defence really well and really give Reading a cohesion that they wouldn't otherwise have. And Morrison's looking like a very astute signing on a free transfer.
I think the fact that he was signed on a free, I think, has gone, you know, not to enough to an extent. I think the fact that Birmingham were supposedly only willing to give him a year's contract, Reading certainly picked up a bargain in that respect. Getting on a free transfer, you know, I think he's still only about 31, 32. So, you know, not anywhere, I think, obviously, you know, coming towards the end of his career, but that experience that he brings obviously has that threat from set pieces as well. So, certainly a great bit of business. And Michael Morrison perhaps doesn't go said enough in the fact that Reading have spent a lot of money, but in fact, it's been the free transfers, the likes of Michael Morrison and Raphael, that have really made a difference for Reading so far this season. Attacking-wise, it wasn't quite as promising. Really, as has been the case for most games recently, obviously, apart from the 3-0 win against Wednesday last weekend, I think Reading struggled going forward for the most part against Leeds. Obviously, George Puskas was up front by himself for most of the game. As Reading went into the 4-2-3-1 formation before switching to 4-4-2 midway through the second half, but just five shots on target for Reading all game. And I was looking at the heat maps for both sides earlier, and Reading spent barely any time at all in Leeds' box, according to that heat map. And really, Sim, was it a case of we've got a question about Puskás in the mailbag later, so we'll save a discussion last year on him until then. But was it a fact that Reading was simply just trying to defend for most of the game against Leeds, or was it a case that there was just no sort of creativity in that midfield at all?
So there are actually quite a lot of opportunities for Reading in the first half, particularly when we won the ball back quickly and we got our transitions right. We burst up the pitch quickly and with a lot of energy. There were chances for us, and Rinomota, Elise, Mate all had chances to really drive up the pitch and allow us to get at Leeds. But even in the first half, we didn't have that. We didn't have two things really. First, the guile in the final third to pick that final pass. Obviously, Swift was playing further back, and Bajari wasn't in the game at all because he was injured. We didn't have that guile to really unlock Leeds and get that final ball right. But also, we didn't have the pace to really stretch and we'll get in behind him. Mate is a quick guy. He's a really direct runner, but he doesn't quite have that burst of pace to really exploit gaps in the same way that Mo Barrow does, or hopefully an Ayob Timbe has. I feel that is basically what Reading are missing at the minute. They don't have that option to really exploit the space that they're able to make. We can get it when we win the ball back quickly and people like Rinomota and Pele drive up the pitch, but if there's no one running in behind, if there's no one really with the proper pace to burn and to properly scare a defence, then we're not going to quite have that extra edge to open teams up. And that's something we've got to look at in the summer.
You look at Reading's bench at the weekend, and really the only player sort of attacking-wise you could bring on to try and improve that side would have been Sam Baldock. You might be able to say Jordan Beater to an extent out wide, but you're missing the likes of, obviously, Ajaria went injured in the warm-up, but as we say, there was no... Ayob Mashiqua, I think, was missed out through illness. And then Mark Byrne obviously didn't include Sonny Aluko, Lucas Boy, or Gareth McCleary. So that one player that you might have thought might be able to change things was Sam Baldock. I know there was quite a lot of claim for him to try and be brought on in the second half. Mark Bowen didn't do that. That was probably one of the biggest talking points from the game, that when Reading were chasing that equaliser, the only sub that Mark Bowen made was to bring Charlie Adam on for John Swift, and Reading went to a 4-4-2 with Rinomota out wide on the right, and Yaki Mate went up front with George Puskás. And again, I think Baldock was warming up for quite a long time, but again, Mark Byrne didn't bring him on. And we've had one question in the mailbag about this from Andy Halls, who says, should Byrne have actually made some subs on Saturday? Surely that game was crying out for Sam Baldock. And obviously, you were there, Sim, obviously. Would it have made a difference? We've spoken about sort of the lack of service that Reading had for most of the game, and would it be in a case that Baldock might have suffered from that as well? Obviously, I think Liam Moore went up front right at the end as well, just sort of showing how desperate Reading was to try and get that equaliser. But would Sam Baldock have made a difference on the weekend?
The big problem, as you say, was the lack of service, and obviously it's a tall order to get that. At Leeds, a team that really defend well and press well, and to come up with any kind of service would have been difficult. And to be fair, Bowen did try and address that by bringing on Adam. Whether or not that was the right decision to bring him on for John Swift was is another question, but he did address, for me, the main question. If you're talking about maybe bringing on Baldock or not, the problem is he the right kind of player to break down Leeds? And I'm not quite so sure he is. He's, relatively speaking, quite a small guy. He's not particularly strong or imposing physically, and when you're trying to break down a team like Leeds, that's what you need. Basically, either you need someone who can hold the ball up, bring others into play around the area, which hopefully Puskás can do. Obviously he's not ideal, he's not as good as Lucas Shaw at it, but he's better at it than Baldock, or someone with a bit of guile or a bit of pace to try and get in behind. And I don't think Baldock is really that kind of player. He's the kind of person that needs to I guess ideally play on the counter off a big man himself. As you saw with Glenn Murray, he was really good at linking up with that kind of player. But is he the kind of player that's going to have that bit of guile, that little bit of quality to unlock a Leeds defence? I'm not quite sure, to be quite honest with you. There's an argument to be made that because Reading didn't have anyone better to bring on in the final third, we should have done it. And I guess it's got a bit of logic to it. If you're chasing the game, you might as well bring him on. But I don't think there was a clear, obvious tactical reason to bring him on. So because of that, I can kind of sympathise with both cases.
I think it's tough. I think in hindsight, Bowen might well look back on his game and think that he probably shouldn't have brought Sam Baldock on. I think just a case of fresh legs more than anything. Obviously, Yaki Mata and George Puskas, I thought did what they could up front on Saturday. But I think just a case of trying to bring those fresh legs on. You know what you're going to get from Sam Baldock. You know, he's going to work hard. He's going to run. Every last meter to try and get to that ball. And I think even just for the last sort of 5 minutes. When Leeds might have got a bit tired, just to bring on someone like Sam Baldock who will work hard, to try and get that ball. I think Mark Burn might look back in hindsight and think that it might potentially have changed the game. You know, as we say, Liam Moore, but she went up front towards the end of the game, and Sam Baldock, I'm sure would have done a better job than him. So I think Mark Burn did say after the game, he said, "I thought about it, bringing on Sam Baldock. That is, but Puskas is a goal scorer, and I pushed Mate into the middle area." On another day, you bring Sam on with 10 to 15 minutes to go. It's just the decisions you make in the heat of the battle. So he's not really saying one way or the other there, Mark Burn. But I think, as I say, in hindsight, he might look back and think that he should have brought Sam Baldock on. We'll get into his full quotes now, and here's what Mark Burn had to say after the Leeds defeat.
I think, we had a game plan. We came here, worked well at it. Thought first half especially we did very well. Yes, they came into it in the second half and we had to soak up a lot of pressure, but small instances change games, and that's what happened. It starts off with the ball going through and it comes up and hits George's hand. Referee gives a free kick and then ball gets played wide. The AFL gets a bad first touch, but it bobbles behind Omar. He gets a toe to it. It bobbles into the box and, two or three instances later it bobbles around and ends up in front of the AFL. And a good finish in the end, but that was the instance that was going to win or lose a game for you, and it happened for them. So, we changed it later on then and went to a 4-4-2 to try and press forward a bit more. And Liam had a chance at the end. I think possibly his own honesty, if you like, has stopped us getting a penalty. He was dragged down, but he stayed on his feet, and then possibly could have had a penalty resulting melee from that. So little things on the day like that determine games, and it went against us today.
Overall then, Sim, is there much you can read into this result? Obviously, we know Leeds are a very good side. Obviously, finished third last season and right up there again this season. I think the win yesterday, the win on Saturday, pushed them 5 points clear of third place. So they may well go up this season. But it was only 1-0, of course. And I think sort of reading the reaction from Leeds fans on social media after the game, they were actually saying that Reading were one of the better teams to have come to Ellen Road this season. So obviously, it's disappointing to be losing the game. I know the official club account put out a Monday motivation tweet this morning, and I think a lot of people were a bit confused by that. Obviously considering that Reading had lost at the weekend, but is there too much to read into a game? I think especially away game. Certainly one of the toughest games Reading will have all season against a side who might well be playing Premier League football next season.
The thing is, the game kind of pretty much went as expectations would have it go. I think going into the match, we were probably expecting a pretty dogged, decent performance from Reading, not to lose too heavily either. And when a game goes to expectations like that, I don't think you've really learned anything. It's not really surprised you. Reading haven't done a lot better than you would have thought they would, and not a lot worse than you would have expected either. And the thing is, for Reading now, for the rest of the season, where we end up at the end of the season isn't going to be judged on games like Leeds away. Obviously, we don't have games like this coming up. We've got Brentford at home, but apart from that, not really any really difficult on paper games. The question is, can we win our home games? Can we beat the teams in mid-table and below us that basically we should be beating if we want to push up the table? And really, in reality, we're going to learn a lot more from playing Wigan at home on Wednesday night, playing Barnsley on Saturday and games like that, basically, rather than going up against Leeds and indeed the Sheffield United game coming up as well. And it's tempting to try and read a little bit too much into a game like this. Obviously, there was a lot of expectation given the bit of frustration about the ticket prices in the week beforehand. But apart from that, there's not really too much point dwelling on it. to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I think I'd largely agree with that. I think, you know, we'll get on to preview the Wigan and Barnsley games later on in the show, but I think we will learn an awful lot more about the training side against those teams rather than against a very good Leeds side, obviously managed by a very good manager with some of the best players in the league as well. And as I say, we'll preview those Barnsley and Wigan games later on in the show, but for now, let's get straight into the mailbag and with your thoughts and questions.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
First up, then we have a question from Jordan Cottle. He says, given promotion and relegation both seem unlikely, should contract/transfer status affect team selection, i.e. players that unless sold are going to be here next year? So just for reference, Sim, the players out of contract at Reading at the moment, obviously we've got the likes of Vita Minone, out on loan, but in terms of the players currently in the first team squad, Chris Gunter, Jordan Nabita, Tyler Blackett, Charlie Adam, Gareth McCleary and Danny Loder are the ones out of contract. Personally for me, the only ones I can see here being here next year, probably only Jordan Nabita. I think Chris Gunter and Gareth McCleary will be let go in terms of wages. I wouldn't be surprised to see Charlie Adam go back to Blackpool. Danny Loder, God knows what's going on with him, but I don't think we'll see him in a Reading shirt next year. And then Tyler Blackett, there's been plenty of reports about whether he's accepted a move to Turkey potentially. So those six players are out of contract. And then obviously we've got the loanees as well. Matt Miazga, Pele, Ovi Ajari, Lucas Boye, and Ayub Masika. Sim, your thoughts on sort of looking ahead to next season, potentially sort of playing a team that obviously Mark Byrne can sort of think about going ahead into 2020-2021?
I think it's just about phasing it out, really. Not doing anything too abruptly, but certainly when there are players here who aren't likely to be here next season, you can get a bit of use out of them before just gradually taking them out of the team. And we've seen relatively recently, I think Blackett was... he was a first team regular, then he just started coming out of the team a little bit, and now we haven't been seeing him very often at all. I think Bone was asked quite recently about this and he said it wasn't really in his thinking, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't, to be quite honest with you, if he didn't have this task of all the summer exits on his mind coming up, basically. And you look at those players there, and obviously there are some that are definitely first team at the minute. People like Ajaria, obviously he's set to stay because of the obligatory transfer. But generally speaking, they're players that we can deal without. Richards has done pretty well at left back recently in place of Abita. Charlie Adam, we've got other players in the centre of midfield that we can use. Boye hasn't done too much. Masik is a bit of an unknown quantity, obviously because we've only seen a few minutes from him. But I think generally speaking, we can afford to basically phase these players out and have a more gradual approach to the summer.
I think you are starting to see it a little bit already. Obviously, we haven't seen Lucas Boye for probably since that Blackpool replay, maybe in the FA Cup. I don't see him getting back into the first team plans. Danny Loder, I think, is firmly out of the picture now ahead of a move in the summer. Gareth McCleary, again, hasn't really played all that match apart from in the FA Cup. Chris Gunn's obviously injured at the moment. And Tyler Black, as you say, you know, we're starting to see more of Omar Richards and Jordan Nabita sort of rotating in that left-back spot. So I would, as I said earlier, I think I'd probably, out of those six out-of-contract players, I'd probably only really expect maybe Jordan Nabita to sign a new deal. And even then, obviously, you know, you've got his long-term injury worries to think about. But I'd be surprised if the club didn't offer him a new contract based on the fact, you know, he's been such a long time, and I think does still have plenty to offer the team. You know, we see what a threat he can be crossing in from that left-hand side. So I'd say out of those six, Sean DeBitt probably will be here next season, but I would agree. I think, you know, gradually, as sort of the games become less relevant, shall we say, towards the end of the season, I think we will start to see those players be phased out even more. Next up then, we've got Sam Michael's question. He says, A.D. Williams and the team on BBC Barks said that player for player, we had a stronger team. I presume he means a stronger team than Leeds. This, I feel, says Sam, has been the case versus most teams we've played to and lost and even beaten. Is it a lack of the team working together that loses games, or are some players just not up to the task? Sim?
It's a difficult one, really, because I'm not really too sure how good our players are individually. There are obviously some players that really stand out, people like Ajara and Swift, who obviously are really good. But you look at others individually, people like Moore and Puskas, who are talented players, but they're not quite as consistent as you'd want. Obviously, Puskas is quite obviously very not consistent. He would have scored more goals otherwise. But even people like Moore, Yeardom, I guess Raphael to an extent as well, they're good players. They are really good players, but are they quite as good in the grand scheme of things as we as Reading fans rate them? I'm not too sure, really. I'm not saying they're not, but I'm genuinely not too sure. But also when you're looking at a team like Leeds in particular, this is a side that's had a decent amount of time to really gel and really work together and really really develop their playing style, basically, under Bielsa. And it's something that Reading haven't had, whether it's under Bowen or Gomez or anyone. No manager really since, I think, Stam has had a full season at Reading at all. And when you do have that, basically any manager that comes in, whatever players they've got, they're not going to be able to get the most out of those players individually if every couple of months the manager's getting sacked and we're having to bring someone in, particularly going between, say, McDermott, Stam, Clement, Gomez, when the playing style was changing so much. It's a little bit different going from Gomez to Bowen, where there's been more of a smooth transition. It didn't really feel like too much of a kind of a revolution tactically between Gomez and Bowen. There was good continuity there, and hopefully it's something we can really kind of build towards next season, really kind of building on from what we've had from Bowen this season. But you look backwards and there's not really been too much kind of the continuity to really develop players and really get the most out of them individually.
I think that's the thing. I think that's why I was an advocate of trying to keep Jose Gomez on for longer, and why I think Mark Bowen deserves more time, and why I think it is a good thing that he's been given that contract after this season. And I think you hear it from players all the time that when new managers come in, it's almost like a clean slate, really. And they sort of have to try and impress the manager again, sort of. You know, even you know, you mentioned there the tactics haven't changed that much between Gomez and Bowen, but Bowen has still changed the formation, obviously gone back to a four at the back, and players still have to adapt to new managers, and it's very difficult then sort of to keep that continuity, as you say. And I think we'll only see, I think hopefully, you know, obviously Mark Bowen can be given the full summer, and we give him time going into next season to try and get this team playing together, sort of bring his own players in the summer. And hopefully, as we say, we can reap the rewards next season. Finally, then, Dave McCormack says, is the problem with George Puskas not scoring either A, he's off his game badly, or B, the service he gets is incredibly poor? And if it is A, the fact that he's off his game badly, is B, the service that he gets, is that the cause? So, complicated question, but obviously George Puskas, very, very sort of Marmite sort of player, I think, in a Reading fan base. Some fans very much in favour of him and sort of giving him time. Others not so leaning on him. Where do you stand on the George Puskas debate? So obviously we spoke about the lack of service that Reading have had the last couple of games, obviously barring that Sheffield Wednesday game, but the lack of service that generally Reading, all of Reading's attackers have had the last few games. And is George Puskas just a culprit of that, or is it something that he himself needs to be doing better?
Boring answer is a bit of both, to be quite honest with you. The service isn't reliable, isn't consistent as you want it to be. But the thing about Puskas is that he needs to work a lot harder. He needs to do a lot more to basically give himself that service. It's one thing to kind of complain about a lack of service, but the best strikers really work hard. They really put themselves about and really really do the running to get themselves that service, whether it's working on the hold-up play to bring others into the game, or making those runs in behind to give themselves as an option to the player on the ball. Those are the things that Puskas has to develop, and I think he's got better at it, to be quite honest, in the last two games. I had a look at the stats earlier, and his pass completion rate is higher in the last two games than his season-wide average, which perhaps suggests that he's improving there. But he's got a lot of work to do. He's got a lot of work to do, not just technically, but also in terms of his attitude, because the thing about him was that he has the ability to do well for part of the game, and certainly against Leeds he was bright in the first half, and I thought he brought others into the game nicely. But when he was more isolated, he seemed to get more frustrated. He seemed to be sloppier. I think there was one bit where the ball went near him in the opposition half, and rather than being able to control it, he handballed it and gave away a cheap free kick. It's things like that. He needs to really be on his game, really need to have that discipline and that maturity, basically. And it's one thing that you don't doubt from Baldock, which perhaps is why we chant that little bit louder to get him off the bench in games like that when Puskás is off the boil. But if Puskás can add that, if he can get that that maturity, basically, then there's every reason to believe that he could be a much better striker. And for me, it's worth giving him an opportunity, giving him the minutes, giving him the games to develop that and really improve. Because if he does, then he's a really good option to have.
That's my main gripe with Puskás. I think I look at him sometimes and I think, can you really be bothered? I think there's not me personally, but as in, can Puskás be bothered? Because you look at him and you think, surely he can run that sort of extra, that extra meter to try and get the ball. And I think his work rate can be called into question, you know, whether he really wants. Obviously, he's been playing sort of second, third to football for the last few seasons. And sometimes you look at him and think, is this really where he wants to be? Or is it where an agent has put him, for example? And obviously, you know, we've got him on a 5-year contract, so we have to give him some sort of commitment. And obviously, whether it should or not, obviously the transfer fee, you know, it is brought up quite a lot, and up quite a lot. And I think it is a fair point, because when you pay, you know, £7.5 million, £8 million for a striker, you expect him to be doing better than what George Puskás has been doing. And you know, I know Mark Byrne has sort of put an arm around his shoulder last couple of weeks, and you know, we are starting to see slowly but surely sort of George Puskás coming, you know, potentially into a striker that we hope he can be. But I think we really need to be seeing more from him. Obviously, it is an issue with service. We've had an issue with service really for the last couple of years, and you know, he's not the first striker, and he won't be the last striker to sort of struggle because of a lack of service in a Reading shirt. But for the money that we paid him, certainly from my personal point of view, I think you have to be expecting more from him. Obviously, we've got Wigan coming up next. Obviously, you've got a hat-trick against them earlier in the season, so hopefully he might be able to bang against them again. But I think from my point of view, we need to be seeing more from George Puskás. And whether that's harsh or not, whether he needs more time to adapt in this country, maybe that's the case. But as I say, we've got him on a 5-year contract, so there is nothing more that I want to see than for him to prove me wrong, you know, prove a lot of fans wrong, and sort of go and, you know, sort of bag 20 goals next season. Because for the money that we paid for him, you would hope that we can get, you know, quite a lot of benefit from him. And hopefully, as you say, he's still a relatively young striker. So hopefully, sort of in the next couple of years, that we stick with him and sort of reap the rewards from his goal-scoring exploits next season. That's the mailbag done then. We'll move into quite a short news bite section this week. Not an awful lot has happened, but a roundup of what's going on around the various teams around the club.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Just before we look at the academy and the women's team, then just a brief discussion on the ticket prices, of course, that were brought up a lot of times last week. Of course, Reading fans being charged £39 for an adult ticket to go up to Welham Road at the weekend, when, of course, Reading themselves charged all away fans a maximum of £20 as part of the 20 to 20 scheme. Obviously, Reading one of the very first clubs to implement that in the Football League. Of course, there is a £30 cap in the Premier League for away tickets. So the irony being that if Leeds do get promoted, then they'd actually have to decrease their away ticket prices. But as it is, they're at £39. I think Sheffield Wednesday was quite similar the week before. There has been some claims, that perhaps Reading should sort of not reciprocate, or sort of not put the 20 to 20 scheme into place when Leeds come to the Masthead and sort of charge them quite a similar price. But I know you wrote a piece on this last week, sort of saying that the Reading should sort of stick to their guns, and it certainly makes Reading look better when they charge every team £20, and it's Leeds who come off badly when they charge teams £39.
Yeah, and to be honest, there's a lot of noise about kind of how good clubs look whether it's Leeds looking bad or Reading looking good or anything like that. But at the end of the day, it's about how are the fans treated? How do we expect to treat fans who pay a lot of money and spend an awful lot of time traveling around the country to follow their teams? And when Leeds treat away fans that badly, and to be quite honest with you, with that contempt, to charge them £39 and then I think for the Twitter admin to have a bit of a pop that we hadn't sold out our away end, it shows just how little clubs care, basically, for fans, despite the huge amount of dedication they put in following their teams. And I don't think realistically we're going to get much action from the authorities. Obviously, the EFL aren't the best for looking after the interests of the game, but it relies on clubs like Reading and, to be fair, other clubs like, I think, Birmingham City have capped tickets at £20 for our upcoming game there. It relies on clubs, basically their generosity, essentially, to cap ticket prices. We're not going to get this ticket cap that is there in the Premier League because, to be fair, clubs do have to rely that little bit more on ticket income. They're not going to have TV income in the same way that even the bottom clubs in the Premier League do. But
I'm not sure about that with Leeds, to be honest. The amount that Leeds are on the TV, I'd be surprised if they can't afford to put down their ticket prices.
Exactly. That is a good point, to be fair. But there are some clubs that don't charge very much. We haven't had to pay too much to go to Birmingham City, the upcoming game. I think West Brom are a good example. Paid about £12 to go to Ipswich last season. And considering they used to be one of the highest charges in the division when they were in the Championship, fair credit to them and fair for them to change their ways, basically. But it feels an awful lot like fans are basically having to rely on the generosity of some clubs and just hope they don't charge very much, rather than there being actually any systemic change from above or any real care from the authorities to protect the financial interests of fans, basically, because it does get really expensive. It's one thing for Reading to put free coach travel on for fans, which is a really great thing. It's really commendable, but you shouldn't have to rely on clubs to do stuff like that, because there are an awful lot of other fans who don't have that option, who maybe have to go on the train for whatever reason. Maybe they don't live in Reading. There are Reading fans across the country, people in the North, people in the Midlands. They don't have that option, and it's very expensive following your club. So it is something I'm frustrated about, but we're not really going to get the change, basically, unless other clubs, out of the goodness of their own hearts, decide to charge less for tickets, and that's the sad reality of it.
I mean, Leeds wonder why their club is so hated, and I think therein lies your answer.
Exactly. Sorry to butt on this, but it's not just the fact that they charge so much. It's then the cocky attitude afterwards, the person on Twitter saying, Reading are the latest club to not sell out. Fans saying, you should pay a premium to watch Bielsa's football anyway. And it's that kind of attitude that makes you not really care for Leeds at all. And the silver lining of it, if they do go up, is that we won't have to play them again. We won't have to pay £39 to stand in that away end. And there you go. You can tell I'm a little bit annoyed by it.
that club just stinks of arrogance for me. I've said it for years, the sense of entitlement that not just Leeds fans, but I think the hierarchy of that club have, that, you know, they've not been in the Premier League for 15 years. You know, Reading have had three seasons in the Premier League since Leeds were last in the top flight, and in that time Leeds have gone down to League One. So the sense of entitlement, the fact that Leeds think they're such a big club, again, that does rather frustrate me. But as I say, whether they go up this season or not, or whether they are destined to be in the Championship for forevermore, who knows? But we won't talk too much on it, otherwise I'm sure both of us will get a little bit frustrated. But rounding up then, what's been going on and the other teams at Reading, the 23s lost 1-0 to Middlesbrough at the Mersey Stadium last week. Shawnee Aluko, Gareth McCleary and Danny Loader all featured in that one. And then on Monday afternoon, they drew 2-2 with Charlton in the Premier League Cup. Again, I think Aluko featured in that one. But that 2-2 draw for Reading means they progressed to the last 16 of the Premier League Cup. So hopefully they play Everton in the next round of that one. So hopefully they can progress as far as they can in that competition. The under-18s, their game against Swansea At the weekend was postponed. I'm not really sure why. I don't think it was because of the weather. But so they remain ninth out of 12 teams in the under 18 Premier League. And then the women, they unfortunately lost in the FA Cup fifth round 2-1 in extra time to Championship side Leicester, which is a bit disappointing. Obviously, I think they went ahead in the first half for a Brooke Chaplin penalty. And obviously, Reading women got to the semi-finals of the competition last season. Before agonisingly losing to West Ham on a penalty shootout. So I'm sure Kelly Chambers and her side would have wanted to go a lot further than the fifth round this season, but it wasn't to be. As I say, they lost 2-1 to Leicester. And then some sad news last week as well. We had the news that Jimmy Wheeler has unfortunately died at the age of 86. Jimmy Wheeler, a club legend really for Reading, a hometown hero really, born in Reading. A one-club man. He made 453 appearances for the club, which is the eighth most in entire history. He scored 168 goals, which is only second behind Trevor Senior. He also went on to be assistant manager of the club to Roy Bentley as well. So everyone's thoughts at the Tyler Stent are with his friends and family. It's a difficult time. As I say, Jimmy Wheeler, a true club legend for Reading. And as I say, all our best wishes to his friends and family. Looking ahead, Ned, as I say earlier in the show, two home games in the league in a row now. Of course, before that, Sheffield United game next week. But the two home games in the league coming up are against Wigan and Barnsley. And we'll get into preview those two now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yep, Wigan on Wednesday and then Barnsley on Saturday. Two sides that Reading have fairly decent recent records against. I was going through the last few results against those two sides earlier today. Four wins and one draw in their last five games against Wigan, of course, including that 3-1 win in November when George Puskas got a hat-trick, and two wins and three draws in the last five against Barnsley, including that 1-1 draw in November. So technically, unbeaten in 10 if you combine the last five against Wigan and Barnsley. Just two away wins for both sides all season. As I say, both teams in the relegation zone, Wigan in 22nd, Barnsley in 23rd. And I think you suggested it, Sim, in the match report for the Leeds game, that it'll be these two games now that are sort of the real mark of how good Reading are. And sort of, I think, you know, given the league positions of both sides, as I say, both in the relegation zone, do Reading sort of need to be winning both of these games?
Yeah, no disrespect to Wigan and Barnsley, but they're games that Reading really need to win. Reading really need to be convincing going forwards in, basically. And that was the problem in the Leeds game, that we didn't have that creativity, we didn't have that real set of ideas, basically, to open up Leeds. But there's going to be an awful lot more of an onus for us to attack Barnsley and Wigan, to really open them up and, basically to look convincing going forwards. And it's something that we haven't done quite so well this season, even under Bowen, particularly after Zhao got injured. Fine defensively, no major problems there, but Reading really need to add that creativity basically going forward to their game, and being able to do that with players, particularly the ones that are likely to be here next season, people like Puskas, Swift, Ajari, Elise. You want to see them really developing and really kind of improving in that regard, hopefully to be able to not just impress this season, but hopefully to take it forward to next season as well.
Both Wigan and Barnsley did actually win at the weekend. They're not actually in too bad a form, either side, actually. Wigan beat Millwall 1-0 and Barnsley beat Middlesbrough 1-0, of course, having also beat Fulham away, I think 3-0 the previous weekend, which is undoubtedly one of the results of the whole season in the Championship. Barnsley beating Fulham 3-0 away. It's only one defeat in five games for Wigan and one defeat in four for Barnsley. Obviously, you know, they are both in that relegation battle. So the game is potentially not as easy as they look, Sim. Obviously, both teams very much down there, sort of fighting for their lives. And really, actually, if you look at the table, I think especially after the weekend just gone, you know, God forbid Reading don't lose both of these games, but if we find ourselves in that worst-case scenario of losing to both Wigan and Barnsley, Reading could get dragged, you know, back into this relegation battle.
Yeah, the worry is basically that we're too complacent, that we turn up to games like Wigan and Barnsley, think we're just going to win because
They're battling against relegation. We don't really need to do too much. As you said, they're battling against relegation and they're going to be in that scrap. They're going to really have that mentality to try and stay up. And obviously they're two teams that have experienced this before. The thing about kind of bouncing between League One and the Championship is that you get a lot of experience in relegation battles, and they're going to have that knowledge. They're going to have that fight and that grit that Reading need to be able to counter. And the more you look at them, they are potential banana skins. And it's one thing to have people like Swift and Elise, really with their individual quality. But if we don't show that in games like this, if we don't really unleash players going forwards, then we're going to get bogged down and we might well find it difficult, and more difficult than we imagine.
I think you look at Reading last season and sort of how many sort of odd points we got here and there against, you know, in games we didn't, you know, perhaps expect to get points in, and, you know, just sort of the odd draw here, the odd win here. And I think certainly both Wigan and Barnsley will look at this Reading game, even though it is away from home for them, and they'll think that this is a side that's very much mid-table, not an awful lot to play for. So I reckon both teams will fancy their chances of at least getting a point against Reading. As you say, Reading need to be aware of that and need to be at the top of their game, because from Reading's point of view, as I say, these two games have to be must-win. And I think, you know, we can, if we win both games, then we can, you know, can very, very safely say that the relegation is off the cards. I think it probably is already. I think I tweeted it last week that Reading's points total at the moment, which is 42, I think, or 43, you know, would have been enough to keep them up in, like, four of the last five seasons. So I think we are safe from relegation, but as I say, very much need to be on our guard against opposition who I think will be more difficult than we're expecting them to be the next two games. Looking at Wigan specifically then, they are actually the joint lowest scorers in the Championship. Their top scorer actually is Che Dunkley, who is a centre-back. He's not played the last couple of games, but the fact that a centre-back is a team's top scorer says that there is something going wrong there. Kiefer Moore is also a threat, also another aerial threat. He's about 6'4", 6'5". So Wigan potentially a threat from set pieces, and I think they're the third most long balls per game in a Championship sim. So it's quite an aerial battle, perhaps, on Wednesday night. A very different type of opponent to Leeds, who like to get the ball down and sort of pass it on the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Wigan scored from a corner in the reverse game. And it's one of those matches where they're going to try and keep it tight. They're going to really try and make life difficult for us and then make the most of those set piece opportunities. And it's going to rely on, obviously, we're talking about focus and concentration earlier for that that goal we conceded against Leeds. We're going to need the same thing, perhaps more in midweek and against Barnsley, but in a different way, because obviously we're not going to have the same amount of defensive pressure. But if we do just assume that we're going to be able to keep them out because they're Wigan, because they're Barnsley, then that kind of complacency could potentially leave us open at the back to mistakes. And it's up to Morrison in particular to make sure that organisation is there and that focus is there. And if we've got it, we should be fine. But we do need to make sure we've got it.
Yeah, I think we are lucky to an extent. I think both Michael Morrison and Liam Moore, I think Morrison especially, are both very good centre-backs in the air. And I think it's almost Morrison's trademark to be sort of heading balls out of the box and crosses and whatnot. So hopefully he'll be in the side. Obviously, we'll talk about rotation in terms of Reading squad in a minute. But Barnsley, as you might expect from a side managed by a German, obviously Gerhard Struber is their manager. They play quite a high-press style. They've got the most tackles in the Championship this season at 19.2 per game. Most of their goals come from two main players. Corley Woodrow has 14 goals this season, and Colin Chaplin has 12. So both, I think, higher than Reading's top scorer, which is Jackie Mate with 10, I think. So Woodrow and Chaplin have both scored more than him. It was a very open game in that 1-1 draw at Oakwell, I think, back in December. 21 shots for Barnsley that day and 14 for Reading. So I think it was a combination of sort of good goalkeeping and poor finishing, as you would perhaps expect from Reading. To keep the scores down that day. Are you expecting quite a similar game? I think Barnsley will be more of a threat to Reading than Wigan will be, I think, purely based on sort of the style of football that they play a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Barnsley approach it and how Reading try to counter them, because something that Reading have struggled against is a high press. Obviously, we conceded a really sloppy goal against Barnsley in the reverse fixture, and it's something that probably will be in the back of Mark Bowen's mind, whether he gets Reading to play it out short, or if he perhaps embraces a slightly more direct approach. It's going to rely on a lot of composure, a lot of bravery on the ball, particularly from people like Pelé, who's going to have to drop deep a lot and get on the ball to try and get Reading moving. But when you've got people like Morrison and Raphael in the side, I don't think they're quite as comfortable on the ball as other players we've had recently. Miazga and Martinez last season, for example, were really comfortable on the ball, really good at playing it out comfortably, even under a press. But Morrison and Raphael are both vulnerable to that. And it's something that Reading really have to decide about, because Bowen does seem to want Reading to play out, particularly at home. And I think he's going to ideally want to do that in the next two games, but it might well be too much of a risk to do that against a pressing side like Barnsley.
I think it was Raphael and Morrison who sort of had that mix-up in the first Barnsley game, actually.
It was when
Barnsley scored. So it'll be interesting to see whether something similar happens again on Saturdays. Obviously, it will be four games in 11 days in total for Reading. And obviously, with the Leeds game, these two home games in the league against Wigan and Barnsley, and then Sheffield United in the Cup next Tuesday. So four games in 11 days is an awful lot for the squad to take on. Obviously, we saw Mark Burn make just the one change against Leeds. Him, you would expect him not necessarily to make you know, sort of 10 changes, but as he did in the FA Cup, but you would think that he's going to have to use his squad a lot more than he has done in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I imagine he'll rotate it a little bit. I don't think he's going to do it too over the top like he has done in the Cup, but he is going to basically just have to do it a lot more than Leeds, basically. We've got hopefully a few attacking players to come back in. You would have thought that someone like Aluko might be involved on the assumption that Ajari isn't available in midweek. Maybe he's going to get an opportunity. And the thing is, in games like this, it's up for people like Aluko to really show what they can do. Obviously, hasn't had a good time at Reading so far, but there is an opportunity for him there to really give Reading, basically show what he's capable of when he's properly on it. He's basically got the chance for a new start at the minute. I don't think we're going to be able to shift him on in the summer, and hopefully if he gets opportunities like this and he's able to take them, but it's up to him.
Hopefully we might see Ayub Timbe Masika as well. I know he missed out on the Leeds game through illness, had that very short cameo against Sheffield Wednesday. I think he went on one run. His pace was very clear, and I'm sure all the Kenyan Reading fans now will be very, very pleased if Masika comes in. And I think certainly it rang true that when Masika played, Reading won. Who knows if he can recover from his illness and get into the squad for each of these two games. Hopefully he can have a positive impact on Reading. Prediction time then, Sim. I've not got the exact results from the Leeds game. I think most people predicted a defeat to Ellenborough. I think you predicted a draw. But what are you going to go for? We'll go with the Wigan game firstly.
It's a tough one because I want to predict a win, but obviously I'm kind of a little bit wary of a banana skin. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 Reading win, and a little bit nervier than we thought, but I think we're just about going to manage it.
I'm actually quite optimistic for this one. I think having seen a bit of Wigan throughout the season, I think actually Reading can counter Wigan's limited threat actually quite well. And I think they'll probably be, well, this is famous last words, but might be one of the easier teams Reading can come up against this season. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 win against Wigan. I will ask you for your Barnsley prediction. I won't hold you to it, because I'm sure things might change between now and the weekend. But what do you think for Reading against Barnsley?
I'm going to go for 1-1 again. I think there's possibly another mistake in us because of Barnsley's press, and that is basically what worries me, because the last game we played against them, and I worry that we're going to have that again, and I can see Barnsley basically countering us quite well, and a 1-1 as a result.
Yeah, I think as I mentioned earlier, I think Barnsley will be a tougher opponent than Wigan, and I think they seem to have a little bit more, perhaps a little bit more spirit and a little bit more determination in them to try and get out that relegation battle. So I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw based on the fact that it was a very open game back in December, but I'm sure that prediction might get more optimistic or more pessimistic based on the result of Wednesday night's game against Wigan. But that does bring to an end episode number 222 of the Tireless Den. It's been a pleasure, as always, stepping into guest host once more. Sim, thank you very much for joining me. I'm sure you're very grateful of the three home games in a row coming up.
Yeah, not quite so expensive on the wallet getting over to Reading rather than going up to Yorkshire 2 weeks in a row. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Indeed, I think the club are putting on some fantastic ticket offers for the next 2 weeks. There's midweek mates rate, for this Wigan game. And I think the tickets are reduced in the cup as well. I think they're possibly only a tenner for adults, which is obviously fantastic value against the Premier League side, obviously for a place in the quarterfinal at stake. As I say, yeah, that one is next Tuesday, and I'm sure Mark will be back after the Wigan and Barnsley games to look back on those two and to preview the big one against Sheffield United in the FA Cup next Tuesday. So keep an eye out on your podcast feeds for that one. Until then, though, thank you very much for listening to today's show. Here's to 6 points from a possible six in the next week at the Mad Stad. And come on, you Ars. You smile.